Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
Joining us on the line, editor at large at My Broadband, Jan Vermeulen. Jan, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm well. How are you?
Excellent. Thank you for asking. E-toll increases. How much will it cost us to drive from Joburg to Durban nowadays?
Yeah, so this isn't e-tolling.
I was just going to say, that's not e-tolling, is it? I mean, do we call everything e-tolls? No, we don't, because we don't pay the e-tolls.
I call the Gauteng Freeway Improvement Project the gantries up on the N1 and the R21 e-tolls.
Right. Okay, yes.
But other people might have a different definition. So this is the normal toll system, and
when money actually changes hands.
Excuse me?
When money actually changes hands.
Yes. And where you can swipe a credit card and so on.
Exactly.
But it's actually interesting to compare and contrast the two. So if you are going to drive down from Joburg to Durban, you will pay 272 Rand in toll fees. And from Joburg to Cape Town, it will cost you 197 Rand. Now, if you compare that to last year, then you're looking at an increase of around 3% in both cases, which is below average inflation for last year, which was 3.3%. So that's in line. But when you look at e-tolls, the prices on e-tolls have increased by well over 3.3%. Sometimes as high as 4%. And it's just curious listening to SANRAL explain these increases, because they said that they used an inflation rate benchmark of 5%. And when I asked them, how did you land on 5% when the average inflation was 3.3%, and then on top of that get to average increases below 5%, they just regurgitated their press release back to me. It was truly bizarre trying to deal with SANRAL about this discrepancy and about the statements they've made in its own press release. But this is the reality of it. If you go down from Joburg to Durban, it is far more expensive than going down to Cape Town, but the increase was in line with inflation.
Right. Interestingly enough, we've never had a problem, or most people haven't had a problem, at least philosophically, paying for these tolls.
Yes, and I think when you look at the national highways that connect our major cities, you know, people go, yes, you know, this makes sense to pay for. It's incredibly convenient. I suspect a lot of that, the revenue on those roads come from trucks anyway. If you've ever driven the hill road leading into Pietermaritzburg, then you know there's just like a billion trucks that drive up from Durban via Pietermaritzburg and then to the rest of the country, you know, whether it's Bloemfontein or then to Cape Town or to Gauteng. There's just a whole ton of trucks that come from Durban Harbour up to the
whole ton
of
trucks. I think it's more than a ton.
I don't think people have, as you say, a philosophical problem paying for that. Also, we've been used to it. E-tolls, on the other hand, the philosophical problem that when I speak to people, it's not so much paying a toll. They're like, cool, you know, we get it. You wanna pay for the upkeep of the N1 and the expansion of the N1 between Joburg and Pretoria because it's already getting congested again. So it really needs to be expanded again. But what we don't want to pay for is a corrupt contract between a state agency
and the randomness, I guess, is I just always felt that they just put these gantries up wherever they liked, wherever they chose, just to extort money from us instead of, you know, when you're going driving down to Cape Town or Durban, it makes sense. Now you're going onto that road that is a beautiful road and it's been very well kept. And yes, I'm very happy to pay for it. But driving between Joburg and Germiston, I just happened to drive under a gantry. That's annoying.
Yes. That said, though, the I don't know how many people remember the N1 before the Gauteng freeway improvement project. It was a disaster. The traffic between Joburg and Pretoria and between different destinations in Joburg was really a problem. It's getting back to those levels now. But if you look at, for example, TomTom used to do these traffic reports, these congestion studies in South Africa's major cities, and you could see a marked difference between when the Gauteng Freeway Improvement Project was finished compared to, you know, before. And so there's something in there that's worth paying. But as I said, when you chat to example for the with the people at the Organization Against Tax Abuse, or the original Against Urban Tolling Alliance, OTA, the issue is with the fact that you've got all of this money. The vast majority of it, if I'm not mistaken, of the revenue flowing to a German company who's collecting the tolls on behalf of SANRAL, and people are looked at that situation and said, no, this is corrupt, and it resulted in a tax revolt.
Which is so interesting. And of course, in many parts in the world, you drive over a bridge, you drive into New York City, you drive in through a tunnel, you pay. People are very comfortable with that.
Yes, yes. And even, e-toll like gantry systems, like this, my mom-in-law, you know, who had traveled, to Chicago, I believe, said that, you know, it was a very simple system. She drove, on a freeway. And then when she got where she was going, she had to go onto a website, look up the license plate of the car she was driving and pay with, I think, her credit card, the toll that she had incurred. And e-toll had that system in place, but people, balked about that as well because it was just open. You know, you type in the vehicle license plate, and you can see exactly which gantries a car passed under. And so people were concerned about the privacy implications of that. And so, yeah, it's just interesting to see how the system in South Africa has been met with extreme resistance compared to similar systems.
And very unusual resistance for South Africans. We normally such a...
I don't know about that.
Really? Do you disagree with me? Do you think that we are a resistant people? I think we are so compliant.
Really? That is super interesting. I would say that when it comes to government stuff, new taxes and that sort of thing, South Africans have just had enough.
Right, maybe.
And like you see this with TV licenses as well. There's just and you know, it's not just government stuff. People also kicked against the annual increases of DStv. And so I think South Africans are at a stay, and there's also I mean, philosophically, like delving into an area which is not my expertise, I should just put a disclaimer on this, but looking at the way that our lockdown had to happen is because South Africans are just obstreperous.
Oh, you see, I see it the other way around. Stop there. And we have to ask our listeners. 34519, that's the SMS line, or 061-895-1019. In general, are South Africans compliant or obstructive? I think those are the two, compliant or obstructive. And Jenny says South Africans aren't compliant. We are complacent. Oh, Jenny's taking it to a whole different deep level that you neither you or I have the capacity to even work out. I'm fascinated because, you know, so we were in Plettenberg Bay in December, and I wrote a number of articles on it. I thought the beach closures were completely absurd. It was irrational. What it did was it pushed people to lagoons where they were crowding on top of each other. But you looked at the beaches, there was not a sausage on that beach. Unless, of course, people had fishing licenses and their granadilla shorts and off they went. Yeah, but, but I thought South Africans are incredibly compliant.
That's the threat of jail time, right? That's the threat of arrest. So, and eventually that bubbled over as well. And so you had Cape Townians at Maizenburg Beach eventually flood onto the beach in a show of civil disobedience.
I know, but they were, half of them were completely mad, Jan.
Yes, yes. And that's just days before the lockdown was going to be relaxed anyway. I agree with you. There was some logic in closing the beaches for things like Christmas Day, Boxing Day, and New Year's when,
of course, I agreed with that 100%.
But the reason it had to happen in the first place, the reason the beaches had to be closed is because the government could not trust people to look out for their own best interests, right? They knew that people would go down to the beaches and risk their lives just because they're like, well, you know, YOLO, I'm going to the beach.
I have to tell you what Barry says. Barry says, South Africans never looted liquor stores. That's compliant.
Yes, unfortunately, that I think illustrates the point beautifully because, the amount of looting that happened, during lockdown as well was a problem. So the other point I wanted to raise was WhatsApp, which is an interesting one.
Yes.
In terms of South Africans and our compliance, but, our complacency might get us here. I love that comment. Is that South Africans, get a pop-up from WhatsApp and it says, you must accept this license agreement or the app will stop working for you by the 15th of February or whatever the original deadline was. And people go, I must do nothing. That's sort of such a South African reaction. Gosh.
That is
ultimatum.
I'm feeling a bit guilty because I feel like that's me. The minute somebody tells me to do something, I just can't. I actually can't do it.
Yes. And so WhatsApp's approach to this, to deal with the backlash, which was global in fairness, but it was just such a beautiful South African reaction to me, whereas one, regardless of creed, color, or sexual preference, we all jumped on that thing and were like, "Nia, ek moet niks, I must do nothing." But what WhatsApp is doing now is it's put like a little banner at the top of the app to go, "You need to agree, you know, by X date, I think it's by." The end of March, and the app will stop working for you. So rather having a pop-up interrupt you and your experience.
They're not being as confrontational.
They've got this quiet banner up there and filtering propaganda out into the domain to try and normalize the new license agreement. And so this is where I think South Africans' complacency could be.
Mike,
not that quitting WhatsApp is necessarily a rational decision.
It's completely irrational.
You have to examine, you know, if you're willing to delete WhatsApp but delete Facebook.
Even the Australians eventually capitulated.
you mean with the Google and Facebook?
Situation.
It's not a capitulation so much as a compromise. The Australian regulations were heavy-handed.
Yes,
and if you universalize them, they don't work. And so they were always going to have to reach some kind of compromise between Google and Facebook. But what was interesting is that Facebook refused to compromise even at Google's level, which is to pay money to establish some kind of news showcase situation and pay a bunch of money to news organizations for that. Facebook even refused to do that. They just shut down a whole bunch of pages in Australia, which did not look good for them. Mm.
Unfortunately, it is 9 o'clock. Jan Vermeulen, editor at large at my broadband. We could chat for hours, but unfortunately, they are going to throw me out of studio in minus 33 seconds. So, Jan Vermeulen, thank you as always.
Chai FM, your station of choice since 2008.